When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There are so many amazing free plugins available for download right now to help you with your production and mixing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/plugins to download and get access to a bunch of free and premium plugins on Plugin Boutique. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me as always is my lovely co-host, Lucifer Lou. Did we already do that one?
No, we did not do Lucifer Lou.
Someone sent that us to us as a joke, and we're like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I forget what it was. It was on our Discord. If you're not part of the Discord, check out the Discord. But we pop up with some random fun in there.
Yeah, we did an episode about, you know what James and I talked about, actually, on that note, is on the exclusive episodes, which you can find on mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive, there you go. And on an exclusive episode, James and I talked about, and this is something that you probably have a lot of thoughts on too, is like, for every person that claims a celebrity is in a satanic cult, like, that is like such, I don't know, like, I can't see it any other way than bullying. It's just bullying these people.
I would call it inferiority complex, just because it's like, why does their success have to be otherworldly? Like, yeah, it's literally within your realm. But the people that want, like, kind of come up saying, like, I'd like to work with these people, they just shoot their shot and end up in the room.
And this is, like, the problem with fanaticism, religious fanaticism, is because if I, as an active member working in the music industry, start to say things like, you know, it's not Satan, they're embracing satanic symbolism because everybody calls them Satanists. Mm. And as a creative and as a way to cope, you have no other choice than to embrace what everybody thinks about you. Like, you can't,
also makes because really if you deny marketing.
Yeah, well, yeah, because people hate on it so much. And yeah, it does work. It's less effective now than it was in the 80s during the satanic panic.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. Yeah, and people will say, okay, you're in the industry, so you're just trying to deny the existence of the reality of it, which is how Satan works. You know, yeah. So it's like, there's really no, if someone actually believes the music industry is embraced by cultish kind of culture, then it's not, like, there's no way to convince someone that it's not.
So what do you say when somebody's wildly successful in gospel?
Yeah, that is guided by, yeah.
That's,
well, I mean, the success,
really funny, yeah.
Kirk Franklin versus Beyonce is also completely different levels of success, and they're both, you know, like.
I would say this, I don't think I've ever heard Kirk Franklin sing a Beyonce song, but I'm sure Beyonce.
Well, Kirk Franklin, like, doesn't sing. Remember he said that? Oh, I don't, you weren't at the Grammys this year, but during this year when he accepted the Gospel Grammys, he's like, yeah, this is crazy that I win this category. I don't even sing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
for me, it's just like a
funny concept. Yeah, so I'm like, basically, like, I mean, all the people that we know are like the celebrities that are working really hard, that are really successful. They're just working really hard. Yeah, and they're really lonely because of this normalized bullying. Like, people calling them, like, they drink baby's blood is, like, the biggest bullying that's, like, I don't know why that's so normalized.
Yeah.
It's rude. It's mean. It's not even close to the truth. And if anything, it only speaks on everybody's, like, fanaticism and inability to comprehend how someone could become successful. They're so distanced from success itself that it becomes nothing other than a delusion, you know?
Yeah.
It's conceptually wild. Anyway, that's not what the episode's about.
But it's a good, nice little token.
Yeah, so basically the point is, you're not going to bully someone with a disability. You're not going to bully someone, like, bullying is bad across the board. And the problem is bullying celebrities and bullying people that you know that are doing better than you or doing well is socially accepted, which makes it worse. Don't do that. Don't do that. These people firsthand are so much like you and I. It's wild. They're, if anything, they're only more lonely because it's hard to tell, like, who can be a good friend. So stop normalizing bullying. Stop normalizing. We're going to stop being mean to celebrities, man. They people need to back off. But at the same time, that negative press is also what gives them more hype.
Yeah. I think we talked about this recently. It's kind of like if I bought a cow for $800 and sold it for $1,100, bought it again for $1,000, how much money did I make?
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, do you not see the trap?
The trap is I'm judging you. No, I'm just kidding.
No, Elon Musk posted on X the other day. I think it was actually yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. Of all days, it would make sense. But he's like, do you believe in the resurrection? And I was like, this is the easiest way he's about to blow up on Twitter today. It's just causing fights.
It's just causing reactions. Yeah. And that's kind of what it is. And labels and marketing teams have been using satanic. Anyway, I won't get into it. There's a couple episodes about the political usefulness of Satan in American politics in order to separate church and state. on Stuff You Should Know podcast. Anyway, my personal interest in theology is leaking out. Please feel free to skip this part.
we gotta slap you with what is it, the easy fix thing where it's like pouring out of a glass tube in the commercial and he just slaps it and it's sealed. What is it?
What the fuck?
Flexi something or
flex, like Flex Seal?
Flex Seal, is that what it
flex
is?
The black. Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna have to slap you with one of those. I don't know which hole we're plugging, but we're plugging it.
Oh my gosh. Oh man. Let's get into today's episode. Today we're talking about mixing rap vocals. Oh man. Talking about rap vocals, you know what my son said to me this week?
J. Cole's the greatest.
Yeah, that's what he said. No, he said my son said to me, he's like, Daddy, can you help me with this level on this game? And he's five, right?
Yeah.
And I like lost. It's a Mario game and I lost a life. And kind of is, he like yells out, Daddy, why are you such a fucking noob? And there's a part of me that's like, that's the first time he's ever swore at me. And like the first time I've ever heard him say the F-bomb. So the first thing is like, where did he learn that? I don't really believe in verbal censorship, but I was like, hey, Kaname, that's like an adult word. You shouldn't say that to your... I was trying to figure out how to teach my son to not say that word. Like, I don't want him to think that it's bad or wrong, because then he'll start doing it, like, eventually because he thinks it's cool, which is dumb. And, or, like, out of rebelliousness. So I'm, like, trying to minimize it, but, like, hey, that's an adult word. You can use it when you're older, but, like, don't say that in front of your teachers or else you'll get in trouble. Do you want to get in trouble? No. Okay, just don't say it. Avoid trouble. You know, and, but we did laugh. And I like helped him recognize it's like, yeah, that's the F word. Like, this is adults saying it. Yeah, it's not a big deal, but I was trying to figure out how to teach. There's like lots of moments as parents. Like I tried to like, he saw his first pair of like bare titties a few months ago. And I'm like, he's like, Daddy, those are made for me. And I'm like, holy. Anyway, rap vocals.
I like the idea that it's like, those are made for me. It's like, you get them, son.
Literally, that's what he said. Like, Daddy, because it was drawn onto like a lowrider car, like the hood of a lowrider car, like in great detail.
It's always a lowrider car.
Yeah. And so he's like, Daddy, can we go back and look at that car? And I said, no. He's like, but Daddy, that car, it's for me. It was made for me. Like, all right.
You know, it's kind of funny. Like, I don't know how much they did this, like, in your neighborhoods growing up. Because you were in Chicago before Utah, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, no, Hawaii before Utah, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm also Chicago and Hawaii before Utah. Yeah, both places.
But in Highland Park, it used to be like a very well-known event. I don't think they do it in Highland Park anymore, unless I'm wrong on this. But there was the car show. And the car show was like where all the most extravagant lowriders with hydraulic systems and everything, custom paint jobs and all that kind of stuff could be found. And sure enough, on almost every lowrider that featured a girl on it, titties. Every single time. And if there wasn't, there was a girl in a bikini showing off the car. And like, as a kid going to it, I'm like, wow, these calls are all about boobs. You know, because you're just a kid. You're like, why has everybody got boobs on their cars?
Boobs are great, man.
They are. They are. Great enough, apparently, to put them on your, you know, car.
All right. That's enough of this tangent. 10 minutes of tangent at the beginning of a podcast is wild. That's 7 minutes too long. Potentially 10 minutes too long. But anyway, let's get into this episode. Happy Easter, everybody, if you're listening afterwards. Yesterday was Easter Sunday. That's why we went with Lucifer. Anyway, we're going to get into this episode. We're talking about mixing rap vocals. And we've done a lot of episodes about vocals. And it's interesting. People always want more episodes about vocals. People want more vocals, more episodes about vocals. But like, I feel like we've talked about everything so many times over. So the only way we're going to talk about this is if we're very specific, and we're going to get more and more specific. Next, tune in for 10 vocal episodes later, where we're going to talk about how to mix bluegrass vocals. No, I'm teasing. But rap vocals, let's talk about in general. Let's generalize a little bit and kind of give some nuance to this. Typically, rap vocals are faster and more rhythmic than pop vocals. Pop vocals have long notes. Ballads have long, extended notes. Rap vocals are very fast with lots of consonants and emphasis in rhythm. Rap vocals are... I don't want to create a hierarchy here and say that it's more important, but lyrics are very important, and... culturally, the genre culture is to hear the lyrics. I'm not going to make any tangents about the quality of lyrics in today's rap music. But I'm generalizing to, in general, in rap, vocals and lyrics are very important. Yeah. Also, typically speaking, in rap music, in any sort of subgenre of rap, these productions are significantly more minimal, and the instrumentals have significantly, typically and generally, have significantly less mid-range information than a pop or rock song, depending on the style of pop. But a country or rock song will be mostly mid-range information with all the keyboards and guitars and synths. Where a rap song, you got 808s, you got drums, you know, you got some percussion, which is top end and top end. Drums is low end, and maybe the snares, maybe some upper mid range. We'll see, depending on the type. You got hats, and you got maybe a melody or two, you know. And if it's the simplest of trap productions, made by a 13-year-old kid who just speed ran a beat live on Twitch in 60 seconds, then there's only going to be a few things, and those mid range instruments are very few and far between. And so we could talk about using width to utilize, because using with is going to be significantly more impactful to a simple mix with less instruments than anything else. And the difficult thing with rap music is, and again, I'm trying to generalize before we give advice to kind of give you perspective and kind of figure out how different songs and different mixing styles can change if you do have a rap song with lots of mid-range information and stuff like that. But we're just generalizing to the typical rap song, that rap, hip-hop, trap, drill, whatever, where very minimal production, you know, 100 tracks or less, 50 tracks or less. A lot of the times they're like 20, 15 to 30 tracks, right?
Yeah.
And total for all the stems. Very small productions. And the thing with very small productions is that it's kind of difficult to get right. I feel like the less tracks there, the less busy it is. Each track, leveling, compression, EQ, the importance of that goes up. So it's like you have to get each track a little bit more right. Then if you have something like 250 tracks, like you can mess up a little bit, it'll still sound good, you know? That's kind of my thoughts. Lou, any sort of any other descriptions about rap vocals that we want to generalize before we start giving advice that fits in?
Sure.
To
there's always
going to
be different styles of like vocalizations. For instance, if you think about like Dreamville style rap, it's very kind of like almost lo-fi-ish in style. While when you listen to something like, I don't know, Rick Ross, like his vocals are always very bright and clear and kind of, I guess more or less more polished than what we're used to hearing with Dreamville. So like the main idea of the generalization is more to just talk about the genre and not necessarily specific artist style. You know, that's pretty much it. Like I'll listen to Kendrick once in a while and his mixes are completely different from a J. Cole mix, which is completely different than like, I don't know, Birdman's mix or Lil Wayne's mix. You know, they're all uniquely their own mix styles, but they all kind of carry similar characteristics.
And there's also differences in within the genre, you know.
There's also subgenres, yeah.
Yeah, there's also subgenres, but there's also eras. Yeah. Like, even now, like I was talking to a dude that's mixing some of the newer Wu-Tang stuff. Apparently they're coming out with some new stuff. I don't know. And we were talking about the difficulty of using modern tools to make something sound old. Mm-hmm. Like classic boom bap or like classic coming out of a boombox sound, like kind of, and by today's standards, like making it sound shitty on purpose to make it feel like it was made in the 80s or 90s, you know?
Yeah, like you almost had to take a step back on the space you're recording in too. Like you need to throw some egg crates on those walls and then record.
Yeah, I guess. But it is difficult to have era mixes. Then there's blends of era mixes where it's like it's an older take, but it's modern. For example, like Bruno Mars and the Silk Sonic stuff, you don't have old school low end. Like if you listen to any of those songs that was made in like Motown days, like golden age Motown days, like 70s, 80s, none of those tracks would have half as much low end as any of the Silk Sonic stuff does now. Yeah. The cool thing is you still get the essence and the vibe of it feeling old but with modern day tonal balance, which comes down to playback systems. It's a lot of technological advancements, like right now with digital music and plugins and accessibility to great microphones, technology in general, like it's really difficult to have bad recordings. And back then, you know, that was the only choice. We can't do good recordings. Like, we don't know how. There's a lot more gatekeeping with the engineering group, a lot less information being shared, nobody knowing how to, like, you had to have $1 million to open up a recording studio. Like, you couldn't have a Focusrite with a cheap microphone. Like, that wasn't a thing. This all comes into play with, okay, so let's talk about talking about all these vocals, some general tips that may help, according to all of these generalizations that we've made. So for example, with compression, something different with ballads or pop vocals, typically release times on compressions will be faster. And yep. maybe like a FET compressor, like an 1176 would be a little bit more useful on a hip hop record than on an R&B or pop or country song because of how rhythmic and fast the vocals are. You need the articulation of every single consonant into a vowel. And the faster the release, the more of the vocals. So like if you have a very slow release and they do like a pow and whatever, like a really long, a really hard consonant, the vowels and the letters after that, the sounds after that are going to be slightly quieter. But if you have a very fast release, it's going to make sure that every single consonant, every single vocal articulation is going to stay up front. You're not going to lose it on the release, lose any volume on the release.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, yeah. A really good compressor for this kind of approach is the 1176, which is kind of classic because you'll hear a lot about like the tube techs being involved in like a lot of modern productions. But when you're trying to go for like hip hop or rap style vocals that you need something a little bit faster, a little more reactive, then kind of opting out of like tubes and things like that has kind of been like what some people have done. A good example for, I guess, a little bit modern, a little more accessible, depending on the studio, would be like the Distressor. You see Distressors used on hip hop and rap all the time because of how reactive it can be, depending how you dial it in.
Yeah. And obviously you can do a couple compressors, maybe a second one you do like a slower LA 2A, but in typically with rap vocals, using some sort of fast compressor is very normal. And the purpose of that is to help articulate the fast words, the fast phrasing again. The vocalizations, so you don't lose any volume on the release. Okay, another thing too, and this is more of an exercise, and I'm going to start off by saying, typically, especially with modern rap vocals, but even all other vocals, even in R&B, there's very little low end kept in the vocal. In a vocal, and this depends on the song, if it's very intimate, so if it's more R&B, you're going to keep a little bit more low end in. If it's pop or ballad, you're going to keep the low end in. Like 200 to 300 hertz of a vocal is it kind of emotionally translates to a sense of warmth and intimacy. It's very intimate. So if you have like a very slow spoken rap song that's meant to be very sexy or you know, typically more, these descriptions are more for use for like ballads and love songs and R&B tracks, right? Mm-hmm. But with rap, it's typically not meant to be intimate. But so on that note, this is an exercise that might be good. If you have any old SSL EQ, it doesn't matter, Waves, UAD, Plugin Slate. Alliance, Slate, it doesn't matter. Grab any old SSL style EQ and what you should do is put that frequency knob on the low end, on the lowest band. It should be a shelf, a low shelf. Put that at like 60 hertz, like a pretty low frequency, whatever. I think whatever the default is on Waves, I think it's like 60 hertz, right? And then slowly turn down the level of that, like the low shelf, turn it down. You might find that you turn that down almost all the way to minus 15 dBs before it starts to sound acceptably thin. Rap vocals typically, culturally as well, for some reason, there's very little low end, very little sense of intimacy. And they're very bright, but it's not brightness through just boosting the top. It's cutting a lot of that low mid information. So use that. That's like, if I'm overthinking how much low end should be in a vocal, I try to minimize all of my options just down to this one knob. So then I take that, like if I'm struggling with the low end of a rap vocal, I'll use the SSL, do the same exact thing that I'm talking about, and turn it down until it starts to feel good. I might turn it down too much and then bring it back up. Yeah. But it's not weird for you to, if it's at 60 to 80 hertz, wherever the starting point frequency is, to turn it down like 10 to 15 dBs, and that might be what's necessary for the song. So that's just a little practical advice when trying to dial in the low end. But generally speaking, in rap vocals, there's a little bit less low mid information.
Yeah. Totally. Honestly, the thing I find myself boosting most times is around like 3 to 4K. Just because I feel like you don't see a lot of processing into the box. And we've seen where different interfaces might have a couple different tones to it, just quality of preamp. But if it's not on like an overly bright mic, a lot of times you hear about people wanting brighter, just vocal recordings and tracks in their mix. But a lot of times I keep hearing people like overly boosting, like around like, I'd say like above 5K. And the big tell is like when 9K or 10K starts to get really harsh and everything starts to become like that whiny top end kind of pokey sound. But sibilance is a big issue with rap. Because you're doing fast compression, fast release, you're also getting that sibilance brought out through compression. So a lot of times I try to actually move frequencies around like 3, 4K a little bit forward, because it gives kind of a presence of like a nice upper mid, a little bit of a brighter tone without actually making the vocal any brighter in the top end. It just kind of places it a little bit more forward in the mix without having to add too much top end. Because what ends up happening is we start compressing, we want the vocal more and more forward in the mix, or you might start adding parallel compression and that EQ might already be in place. And then you start noticing that all that sibilance and everything starts coming out, and then that top end really starts to get pokey. And then we start trying to re-darken the vocal. A lot of times for me, it's not even just a top end issue. It's just give it a little love around like 3 to 4K. And you'll notice that the vocal comes forward. Like if you want to place the vocal forward in the mix or behind the mix a little bit, it's usually around like 1K that I'll push or pull from. But if I'm trying to add a little bit of presence or take away a little bit of presence, it's usually that 3 to 4K on my end. Similar to the low end, because kind of like how you said, adding a little bit of that low end back is going to make it sound a little more intimate. Taking it away is just kind of like the placement of a traditional rap vocal. But if you're trying to go more forward without adding more compression or things like that, that 1K is usually good. But if you're trying to add a little more presence, a little more aggression to the vocal, that 3 to 4K is kind of a nice little sweet spot to push and pull from.
Yeah. A lot of upper mid-range focus in general.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that I want to talk about, which is using of width. In previous episodes, we've talked about how there can be frequency clashing, and you can use width to avoid the clashing. So if you have a very 3K central synth and you widen it and you kind of remove that center information a little bit and kind of focus it more on the sides using some sort of width, isotope, imager, it doesn't matter, whatever width plugin or chorus, right? What it'll do is it'll make those frequencies significantly less crowded, because the vocals will still come up through that phantom center, and then the synths will surround it. So it's a little bit less competition. You might actually hear a little bit more articulation in the vocals and separation in the vocals. So that's one way of using that. But at the same time, do be aware that if there is melodies or samples that do take up a lot of high mid information, you're going to have to make room for it. And it's not just EQ. Sometimes it's just levels. Also, generally speaking, the vocals in a rap song, depending on the era and the culture, listen to a bunch. There's a lot of references out there. And for every time I say something, there's going to be a perfect example of the opposite of what I say. But generally speaking, rap vocals, the vocals, since they are so important and emphasized, they should always be the most important part. They should be significantly louder, and the only thing really typically competing with vocals in a trap song is like the hi-hats, depending. And I do think also, along with the high mid information, is that any sort of samples and synths or anything like that are typically lower in volume than you would think. usually in order to make room for the vocals. Because when you have conflicting frequency, that doesn't mean that, I want to be clear about this. This doesn't mean that no matter what the volume is, that they're always going to be conflicting. No, it means that one needs to be prioritized. So you can use EQ, but more basic than that, you can avoid conflicting frequencies by leveling. So if you have a vocal that takes up the same space as the synth, turn down the synth and all of a sudden you'll have less competing frequencies. You know what I'm saying? So it's more about an amplitude thing. For some reason, people just get it in their head that it's just 100% EQ. It's not an EQ thing. It's also a width and a volume thing.
Yeah.
Be clear about that. So I like that. Also, depending for more modern trap rap, a lot of airband stuff. Like we're talking 20 and 40K high shelves, Moog EQ. Our favorite is the... this is a Leslie
MDW.
Brath, MDW, which is the George Massenburg digital plugin, any sort of, let's see, hold on. UAD has the Precision Channel Strip or the Precision EQ.
Yeah.
Plugin Alliance has like three different Massenburg, Amec type EQs.
Yep.
Any of those, this is a Leslie Brathwaite trick if you want to boost the top end. Without making the S's crazy, because if you boost like 6 to 12K, there's a chance that you're really going to be boosting the sibilance. So you want to bring in that air band just above the sibilance, so it kind of it smoothly adds some of that 8 to 12K rather than just boosting there, right? So you're kind of, I know you can't hear 40K. But the point of having a high shelf at 40K is to, because it's a very big shelf, that shelf probably starts at 10K. But if you're boosting 20 dBs at 40, you're only probably boosting 5 at 15 or like 10, right? So it's meant to add articulation, add smoothness, a sensation of smoothness. It's a smooth high shelf feels very different than a very abrupt. And I don't want to say harsh because that's not quite right, but a very abrupt and rigid top shelf, high-end shelf that starts at 10K. So one of the, this is a Leslie Brathwaite trick that he almost always does. He uses the UAD Precision EQ. Again, any sort of George Massenburg Amec EQ works here. You go up to 26 or 27K on the highest shelf, and you go 0.4, which is the the widest bandwidth. Don't use the high shelf. Use the lowest bandwidth, which is typically 0.4, and then boost a couple of dBs of that at 26 or 27 hertz, depending on the plugin that you have. And that should boost some of that airband. Of course, Moog EQ does a great job.
Yeah.
MAAG, UAD has it, as well as Plugin Alliance has it.
I'm wondering if what the top band in the Harrison EQ is.
I'm not sure off the top of my head. Yeah, also, you know what else?
That one has a really nice top end.
You know what else sounds really good, actually, that I've been using a lot more? Shout out to our sponsor, Auto-Tune, here.
Oh, yeah.
If you have the everything bundle from Auto-Tune, they have the vocal EQ.
Yeah.
Vocal EQ is fantastic. They have a tilt function, so you can boost the top end and cut the low end. So we were talking about cutting low end. So you just do a little bit of a tilt EQ. That'll kind of do it faster, generalize. Then you have, well, we're not going to talk about the dynamic EQ that follows pitches. So you can follow the second formant in a vocal, because it's the auto-tune algorithm like tracks it. So if you change notes, it'll keep pulling down. You can have a dynamic EQ. It's like surfer EQ. We're not going to talk about it, but they also have an airband built in, and it actually sounds nice. I actually really like Auto-Tune's vocal EQ, and I think as far as functionally speaking for vocals, I think it's great. I actually use it quite often.
It's kind of my surfer EQ used to be this, and that's how I know it's good. It's kind of my go-to for cleaning up low mids in a vocal. It's the biggest tool I can have for that. Cause you can do fixed points on like something like a multiband compressor or a dynamic EQ like in Q3. But the fact that it can track low mids, and sometimes it's just a specific range that is just running around. And like, let's just say it's a busy vocal. they're just doing some runs and stuff, but every so often, like, it just gets a little thick and it's not always on the same note. Cool. It helps me really clean up that low mid. But outside of that, you know, honestly speaking, vocal EQ has been, it's been quite nice because I felt like we needed an update to Surfer EQ, and that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a whole another tool that you can use. We won't talk too much about it. That could be its whole own episode, but
yeah.
And it's doesn't always work. It's just another tool set to use. Yeah. I don't really know what else to say. I mean, it is useful. It's cool.
Yeah.
We need to talk about Split EQ too, although it's less to do with vocals, but I just download bought Split EQ by Eventide.
Yep.
Holy cow.
Is it Eventide through Newfangled Audio? Is that what it
is? No, it's their own.
It's just straight up Eventide.
Yeah, it's just Eventide.
Okay.
Anyway, but that's less useful for what we're talking about, which is rap vocals. What else do we want to talk about? Oh, effects. You wanted to talk a little bit about effects.
Yeah.
Give us the rundown a little bit on generalized use of effects in hip hop vocals.
Sure. It's typically pretty simple, right? You got a little bit of verb, a little bit of delay, and sometimes you got a little bit of chorus or flanger to kind of give some texture taste and stuff like that. Usually some parallel distortion to add some aggression depending on the type of vocal and everything. But I would say that the most commonly overused effect to me at the very least is reverb, because every vocal is going to have some level of reverb. And one of my favorite reference examples would be I think somebody had asked Young Guru, I don't know if it was at the SAE interview or what it was, but there's a video out there where, you know, he even brings it up where people would ask him, like, how come there's no reverb on Jay-Z? And he's like, no, there's reverb on it. You just can't really hear it that much. It's for more for the mix than it is for the effect. And I feel like that's kind of when I first started really listening with the intention of, like, how people use the reverb to kind of set a vocal in its place of the mix. You know, this interview is from like over 10 years ago. But if you look it up, Young Guru is the one to actually kind of talk about it a little bit. And he gave a good example where it's like, you know, if you go too dry with the vocal, let's say that hip hop songs that you listen to don't sound like they have reverb on it, but it just doesn't feel like they're connecting. It just doesn't feel like it's in the same space as the record. Chances are you need to put a little bit of reverb to kind of help it fit in a little bit. Now, the issue that I find is not necessarily that they're adding reverb, but adding too much of it. They'll add too long of a tail or not enough pre-delay to have the clarity brought back in front of the reverb so that the reverb is just slightly behind the vocal. Or they use a preset that says like rap vocal hall, and then it really sounds like you're in a hall. And because it's called that, maybe you don't have that much experience playing with like these effects, you're kind of like, well, it says hall and it sounds like I'm in a hall. This should be fine. The influencer or whoever said I should use hall effects on vocals, so I clicked on hall. But a lot of times, if you really listen to records, they're not using a ton of reverb. And when they are, it's very like filtered out reverbs. It's in a very specific range where they're kind of filling in a hole in the mix. But you don't really see a lot of it. Similarly to like delays, you don't hear too long of a delay. It's not constantly running. It's used more to emphasize specific words. And that's kind of like the difference with like a traditional pop mix and like a hip hop mix, where like on a pop mix, you might have actually consistently more reverb on the vocal, just like a thicker bed of it, if you will. And sure, it's going to get emphasized with specific words, just like any mix in pop or hip hop. But the bed of reverb that you find in hip hop mixes or rap mixes is typically a lot smaller amounts of it. You know, it's more for like just putting them in the pocket of the space more than creating an effect to make them so grandiose.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a big deal with I love that you talk about long tails, mm-hmm. or just like reverb time in general. Typically longer ones like a hall, like you mentioned, don't work that well.
Yeah.
Dry. You sometimes if you want the OK, here's some practical tips. If you want the sensation of dry, but give it some sort of acoustic space, a touch of a short room reverb.
Yeah,
maybe a touch of about 100 to 20, 140 milliseconds slapback delay with like very little feedback. Mm-hmm. Maybe like a single, or maybe it slaps once or twice. a little bit, like barely audible. Just like enough to give a sensation.
Room reflection sense.
Yeah, yeah. You get a sense of room reflection. That usually helps, especially this is especially if you are recording in a booth, a vocal booth that is very dry.
Yeah.
The worst thing that you can do is record in a vocal booth with very little with no acoustic treatment, because that room verb, the natural room verb that's being picked up in your tiny little closet without any clothes or without anything in it, you're not going to be able to remove that. And that small reverb that is built into the recording now, is burnt into the recording, is sucks. It sucks. Yeah. And it sounds cheap. It adds to the cheapness of the vocals. So you do want to have the control. So that's why typically we recommend for when recording vocals, you have a very dry setup. Now, this may sound dumb, but covering your walls with heavy moving blankets.
Yep.
Recording in your closet. If you have a walk-in closet, or if you have a closet that you can step into on the side with clothes, clothes acts as absorption. You know, if you, for some reason, I've even done or seen, our old studio for when I was in high school, the family that we were, my friends that were in my band, they had like extra mattresses. So we stacked, like, we had one mattress on top and like three mattresses around to kind of make like a cave. So it's like a impromptu vocal booth with mattresses, old mattresses.
I think
that worked really well.
The popular reference recently has been, what is it? Drake recording his album in the hotel and you see the mattress flipped against one of the windows.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And that may have been like a little bit more sound isolation too.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a really big old mattress.
And I do think that the last thing that you should think about is trying to avoid, like, this is the worst case scenario, but trying to avoid any sort of reflection shield. Like, by itself, a reflection shield is not enough.
Yeah.
Something better than a reflection shield is like the Chaotica eyeball, like something that encapsulates the microphone. But it's still like, that's worst case scenario. Those do not sound good.
Yeah.
But it's better than absolutely nothing.
Yeah. The good rule of thumb is this. I'm going to make this short and sweet. A cardioid microphone, which is typically what you're going to find in a studio for vocals, rejects signal from behind it. So treating the space behind it with a shield is only going to add more emphasis into like the low end and everything that's picked up into your mic, which is going to kind of mud up your sound a little bit if you're not using the right product, or I guess not using it properly. The other issue is this. Most people will put the acoustic panels that they're recording in the booth with behind the mic as a mistake. If you go to any major studio in a big, giant reflective room, they put the panels behind the artist in front of the mic. Reason being is that it captures most of its information right in front of it. So it's dampening all the reflections that surround the vocalist, not the ones that surround the mic. That's kind of the practicality issue there. So if you're going to take any advice from this about like how you should maybe set up your vocal, if you're going to set up a mattress on the wall, make that mattress be behind your back when recording. You know, don't face the mattress. You're kind of defeating the purpose.
Yeah. No. Let's see there. That's great advice. And then if you have a single mattress, you know,
if you got three.
Yeah. Just put it in a cave. All right. on that note, typically speaking, what else do we want to add?
Honestly,
if you are in an untreated room, well, go ahead. What?
I was going to say, finding the sweet spot for like, vocals and percussion.
Ooh.
Yeah, because another big identifier in like hip hop versus like pop or rock is like in rock mixes, like the kick isn't necessarily the loudest thing. It's very defined, quieter thing. If you think about it, like in rock music, like you still hear that kick drum and it still stands on its own compared to bass in a good rock mix. But it's not like a loud thing. It's not supposed to be knocking the speakers with just a kick. Like the aggression of the overall mix in rock is kind of what's supposed to be loud and proud on the speakers. But in hip hop, it's a lot of like kick, snare, 808, vocals and hi-hats that kind of take the prominence of the mix, you know? So if you notice, everything there is
priority.
Priority, yeah. They take priority in the mix. So a lot of times you're going to find people just saying, you know, just make the vocal loud, make the kick and snare hit, and I'm good. You know, that's a lot of times whenever you're like, okay, anything specific you want out of the mix, that's usually the first three things I hear. And aside from that, I just want to make sure that the bass is loud, but not distorting the mix. So finding that balance is kind of the tricky part in hip hop, because unlike a rock mix where there's a ton of things going on in the mid range to help fill up voids and everything, most of those instruments aren't very mid rangey things. Bass is not necessarily mid rangey by nature unless you're distorting it. Hi-hats are more top-endy than they are mid-rangey. Snare is kind of more low-mid outside of like the crackly top of it. And kick, you know, depending on the style of kick, it could be a boxy kick, but, you know, typically not very mid-rangey.
Yeah, for sure. Last thing, placing vocals in general. Here's another practical tip for you. If you don't have a second pair of monitors, and this works even with headphones, if you are having a hard time figuring how loud the vocal should be, you can't figure out, you want the vocals to translate, right? Like you want it to sound good in the car and everything else. You can simulate a different pair of speakers and give yourself a new perspective, a fresh perspective on the volume of the vocals by turning your speakers or headphones down to whisper levels. Maybe even monoing it if you have a button to mono them or something like that. I have a button on my interface to mono my speakers, and sometimes I use that. And I typically do this on almost every mix, and I do it for about 3 to 5 seconds. It's not very long. But when I'm placing the vocals and I have the fader, I turn down the volume of the speakers down to whisper quiet levels, and it gives me a new useful perspective on how the vocals sit according to the beat. And it gives me more than that. It also gives me useful perspective on just the instrumental in general, tonal balance in general, the feeling of low end and things of that nature. So you can simulate an alternative perspective by just doing that. So, and then you can hear. And I will say, emotionally speaking, having vocals on top, being the loudest, does feel different than having vocals buried in the mix. Oh, and yeah. Also, yeah, so it's like, that's another thing too. Like you might want to, placing it is not just a, there's no right or wrong, but placing it, having the vocals a little bit lower than something else or a little bit higher than everything else changes the vibe of a track. And it's more important that you are aware of how the song morphs emotionally than getting it to be in the exact right spot every single time, because that's what you always do, or that's what you've heard you're supposed to do. Sometimes you might want to tuck the vocals in a little bit just on purpose, and you'd be surprised, especially with vocals or drums or anything, turning them up or down 2 dBs can make the song feel different. It doesn't take a big leveling move to make it feel different, so just be aware of that.
Yeah. No, honestly, I agree. Like, it's kind of funny. I stay quiet just because, honestly speaking, I'm like, yeah, no, that makes sense. But honestly speaking, like, if we're going to, I guess, expand a little bit on the effects side of things, I think one of the ones that I kind of hear a lot that just kind of starts warbling out is people try to do doubles by duplicating tracks. Because I wanted to talk about a little bit about chorus and flanger, but I don't think those pose as much of an issue as the issue of people duplicating tracks. Because I'll be honest, I received a track the other day from like a known rapper, and I was still very surprised to see that they sent me duplicated vocals with like 7 milliseconds ahead and another one 7 milliseconds back. I understand that they might be looking for a static effect out of it, but when I asked them about it, I'm like, hey, I just noticed these. By any chance, were you looking for these to sound like a double? They said yes. And I was like, okay, cool. No worries. I just muted and hid away those duplicated tracks, and I just used a doubler plugin, because even a doubler plugin sounds better than that. But reality is this: if you're looking to make the vocal sound doubled and stuff like that, you have to wrap it twice or have your client wrap it twice. Don't rely on the whole 7 millisecond ahead and back thing. I've seen it a ton of times, and 9 times out of 10 I'll just delete, remove, or whatever. I'll put something else in, and a lot of people will be like, oh, how'd you get it to sound like that? It was one plugin. If you want to go the easy route, there's plugins for it. But it'll never sound as good as, like, well-timed, well-executed doubles. But I get it. Sometimes you're just cranking out ideas, and you're working with an engineer just to make things easier for you on the creative process. And they might have just duplicated tracks, and everything's good. But if you could be mindful of that, then you'll get a better end result.
That's awesome. Yeah. In general, this is vocals across the board. If you want the sensation, the feeling of doubles.
Yeah.
There's a reason why 12 string acoustic guitars, each string is an octave. There's a reason why when the strings are slightly out of tune with each other, it sounds better. It rings more. It's the resonance. You get a little bit more resonance. So when vocals aren't, when doubles are not perfectly the same exact, we'll even say phase. The phase correlation is not exactly the same. When you have a little bit of variance in pitch and timing, it helps accentuate the double a little bit more. It sounds more natural. It sounds better. Just record it two or three times rather than duplicating a track. Duplicating is a last resort. And yeah, there are ways that you can work around it to give it enough variance to, but yeah, you typically want to. And this is the dangers of vocal line too. We won't get into it. Vocal line is great, but in general, the tighter that you make vocals timing-wise, it does give a little bit of a different vibe. It's not necessarily better, or using vocal line doesn't make vocals necessarily better. It just tightens it up, and sometimes too tight makes it sound unnatural. So that's just something to consider.
Yeah.
You also mentioned things like chorus, flanger, things of that nature. In general, those are great effects. I also, last thing I wanted to mention was the concept of sounding cheap. And this is something that happens a lot within hip hop and the accessibility of hip hop, the fact that beats are so accessible, so cheap, easy to produce. The more popular, this is typical for anything, the more popular a genre becomes, the more money a genre makes, typically those genres get watered down into a less creative act.
Yeah.
Becomes, and that's kind of, I don't want to say anything else, but we never, as a podcast, me and Lou, we never ever recommend lowering the bar. We are always about helping people lift themselves up, you know, to give them the credits, the support, the knowledge to make yourselves better, but we are never about lowering the standard, lowering the bar. Okay. On that note, one of the ways, let me think about how I want to phrase this. There are many different ways to make a vocal sound more expensive, and in turn, make it sound more thoughtful, make it sound more intricate, and in turn, make it sound more interesting. And I think will turn into better songs. Some things include, don't just put blanket delays on the vocal. Automate the vocal. If I hear a blanket delay, and if I hear the same exact effects throughout the entire song, it sounds lazy.
Yep.
It's boring. If you want to keep a vocal interesting, automate a reverb. Make it longer for just this section on the end of a phrase. Give it a tail on the end of this phrase and then shorten it. Cut it out. Make it completely dry for just this before the drop comes in, right? Make contrast. The more use of thoughtful contrast makes a song sound more expensive, more fleshed out, makes it feel more interesting, gives it ear candy. Delays. Instead of just having a blanket delay where then you can hear the tail end of phrases, just automate the phrases, the tail end of phrases. Just that word, so you don't hear the other stuff bleeding into that repeated delay. That's weird. It's cheap if you don't automate it.
Dry delays too for me. Like add a little bit of reverb to that delay. Feed it into your reverb bus or something. Just get it to sit a little better in the track. Sometimes a digital delay, if that's like, for instance, like the H delay is a great example of this. H delay has kind of a sound to it. I don't know if you'd agree with that, DK, but I feel like H delay kind of has its own little tonal character where like you can kind of tell it's H delay. But throw it on a little bit of reverb and it kind of softens it a little bit.
Yeah, but, H delay and Echo Boy, yeah. These are great. Like, there's a reason why the people use them all the time.
Yeah. Or you can use, what is a diffusion, I think it is. I forget what Valhalla delay calls theirs, diffuse or something of that nature, where it basically breaks apart the statically repeated part of the delay. It kind of reverbs it out a little bit. It kind of blurs it a little bit. I forget what it's called, but there's some delays have a function for this.
Yeah, a lot of delay plugins have a built-in reverb. I'm also thinking about the one from Baby Audio.
There's also Relayer from UVI.
Oh, yeah. So there's a bunch. But anyway, either way, it's important to be thoughtful and to create contrast. And this, we'll finish up the episode by giving some general advice, because this goes into, you got to be thinking about this for the instrumental too.
Yeah.
This is across all genres. But especially with hip hop, where people are fighting to keep hip hop mainstream right now, to keep it interesting. Arrangement is so valuable. And I can easily make an argument about how arrangement is more important than any sort of mix technique. Arrangement for vocals means contrast, automation, sections. Maybe that's a performance thing where one verse sounds more aggressive and the other verse lyrically is less aggressive and it's meant to be more intimate. So you mix those slightly different, or you do different effects, right? Maybe you distort just a phrase. Give it lots of ear candy. Give it contrast. Don't be cliche and don't go for the low-hanging fruits. One thing that I do is I will start the song from the top, because I usually repeat a section, right, when I'm mixing. But I start from the top. I close my eyes and I think about it. And the songs and the vocal, the instrumentation, oftentimes tell you where what they want to do in different sections. And I'll let the song play the entire time. I'll have a notebook, or I'll leave notes in Pro Tools because they have a notes section. And I'll leave notes in real time as I'm feeling the song. Maybe I'll leave markers with different notes. But I let the place, if I kind of like lose inspiration, I'll play the song from the top and just write down what I'm feeling. Oh, this would sound cool with a little bit of a delay here, or a little down sweep here. Oh, some sort of like a long 7-second reverb tail on just this word. All right. Some phasing here, some distortion here would sound good. You know, letting you listen to it as a song. Because if you play it from the beginning, you can do nothing other than hear it as a song. But if you repeat a section like we always do as mixers, you keep playing the chorus, just a small section of the chorus back to back, it doesn't turn into a song. You're now mixing frequencies. You're mixing tracks. And if you listen to it from the top without stopping it, it turns back into a song and can give you a new, fresh perspective. So again, the idea is building contrast and interest through arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just do the same 4 to 8 to 16 bar loop, you know, and don't just like mute some parts of the loop, not like change it up somehow. And I hate to say this, but this takes a little bit of potential music theory knowledge and creativity, but we're no longer in an age where I think it's acceptable to just mute the kick drum during this 4-bar section and then, you know, make the melody octave down for this section. You know, like, no, you got to change it up a bit more, like be thoughtful about it. We can tell when productions, mixes are thoughtful, that they've taken a lot of care and talent. And we can tell when you speed run a beat production. Yeah. So
like,
it's very easy to
sometimes
tell.
The sound of a speed run is cool because we look at it as just that. Right. Like recently I was listening to shout out to Miso for like resurrecting tracks that I completely forgot I worked on. Not that I like listened to it and never heard the song before kind of experience, but it's just like, oh, that's right. I forgot about this record. And there's this artist called Wado 8. And recently I've been listening to his album over and over again. But I also know like the context in which it was recorded and who was involved and all that. So I would describe it more as like that, like quick and dirty kind of like album where it's like you worked with the producer. The producer is the one that recorded everything. They quickly mixed it, threw it, send it out for mastering and everything. And then you listen to it and you're like, Yeah, it sounds good, but it also sounds like they were really just cooking up an album on a time crunch and everything. And that in itself sounds like a vibe. So if that's what you're after, that's cool. But if you're going for gold, you can tell the difference for sure. You can absolutely tell the difference. If I could tell the difference and I'm the one that worked on it, I'm like, yeah, this wasn't recorded with time and patience and like consideration of how that take was and this and that, how that
if
reverb
things sound
was thrown.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Dude, you don't want things to sound cheap.
Yeah. Now, once again, if you're trying to sound like Tupac back in the day, even Tupac had better automation than some modern people that have way more tools than Tupac ever did. And that dude's automation levels on the console was like fucking, they had to build a supercomputer in the console just to be able to automate the faders. They weren't automating EQ throws or anything like that. No. EQ throws, yeah. Like they weren't automating high passes or anything. They had to do that shit manually. Yeah. So if you want to compare yourself to the greats, you have to make great strides for success.
Amen. Amen. There's one more thing I wanted to add real quick. But I have forgotten it.
It's okay.
Oh no, I was going to say, this is a thought process that I'm having right now, but the argument with easily produced low effort songs is very low effort lyrics. And there are songs, we all love songs that are great for nothing other than just the vibe. The vibe is good.
Hey there, Delilah, I'm trying to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey there, Delilah, bitch, I'm trying to fuck. You know, like that's a, you know, there's a reason why Lil Pump was so popular, you know? It's not thoughtful. It's not necessarily good, but it's a vibe. And this is the only thought that I have about that. There's nothing wrong with creating songs that have no other value than the vibe. And the vibe is probably the most important part. But once you rely only on the vibe, then you have to compete a lot more. Meaning, if it's not the style of music, it's just the vibe that gets you in the mood. Now you're competing with anything else that creates that vibe. That's even cross genres, electronic, country, rock, punk. This is the part of the reason why punk music is getting significantly more popular. Hyper pop is getting significantly more popular these days, and hip hop is losing to these other genres now, is because when you over rely on just vibe, you're expanding your competition. You have to, it's like when, this is the tip that we give for mixing. When you don't put your face on your website and you become more of a service, people can just book, check out, mixing, buy, you are now competing with everybody else on the internet. You're not competing with other mixers in your local area. You're not competing with other rock mixers. You're expanding your competition to everyone on the internet. And now your competition is solely based on price. And you never want to compete on price, because that's how you continue to not be able to charge more. The same concept exists for this.
It's the literal race to the bottom.
Yeah. If you only rely on vibe, then you are going to lose on everything else. So give yourself a chance. Do more than just the vibe. Make hip hop good. You know, like
make
stand up for
good
the culture.
Again. DK 2024.
I don't want to say, because that makes it sound.
No.
I don't want to say generalized things like it's bad right now.
No. But
I'm not gonna. I'm not
also,
gonna. My opinion, regardless, hip hop is losing a lot of money.
You could also say it in the sense that even when hip hop took over, everybody's like, oh, rock is dead. It's like, no, rock is still doing fine. There may not be the same level of demographic behind it right now, but it's still good. But the standouts are really going to be the ones that win, because there's something that's helping them stand out in a time when they need to. So I'm not advocating that we lower the bar at all. But rather, if you're going to enter a market space where the genre you're going into is just not as popular as others, or maybe it's losing popularity in this case, then you want to actually make sure that you're trying to stand out. Now, that doesn't mean going crazy or drinking baby's blood, but that does mean like, hey, you have to be a bit more intentional with the way you're going about your productions, your mixes, your performances, and actually stand out. For instance, a good example for this for me is always going to be like Queens of the Stone Age. Queens of the Stone Age was always kind of like an out there band, and their recordings could be argued that they're not as good or as quality as other records. And the same people even involved in their records, like Dave Grohl, who's the Foo Fighters, has some of the best recorded albums for the rock genre right now. But honestly speaking, they've always kind of been lower fidelity recordings, but the vibe is always there. Like, they stand out in their music, their performance, and everything. When they do shows, they really stand out. So even though rock wasn't as big in the later years of their albums still did fine, and people were still showing out to the shows because they stood out. They had something that just wasn't available at the moment. But if you're just going to do a typical punk progression, you know, four power chords, and then you go into your chorus, four power chords again, you know, it's nothing really that special. Look at Rise Against. They entered the punk scene and everybody's like, oh, that's not real punk. But it's like, maybe not to traditional punk, but it's real successful. That's the real part of it. It's doing really good. It's doing really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And so compete on more than just vibe.
Yeah.
Also compete on vibe, but also compete on more than that. All right, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Again, we don't have any... we have Sweetwater. We have an affiliate deal with Sweetwater, FilePass, CD Baby, Plugin Boutique, all these things. Just go to mixingmusicpodcast.com to see if there's any discounts that we have available. And if you use any of our links, we get a little bit of money. Or even better, if you want more technical tips, technical episodes, how compressors work, how to do more of this, how to mix better, how to master better, what is dither, things of that nature, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive, and you get access. You can find for $4 a month or $40 a year, you can find, I think it'll double the episodes. I think there's like 250 exclusive episodes, and you get all of those ad-free if you sign up for the exclusive episodes of the Mixing Music Podcast. And again, it's only $4 a month. That's less than a cup of coffee. $40 a year if you want to save a little bit more cash. So thank you so much for everybody that signed up for that. Maybe on the next episode, we'll do a shout out for all the people that have signed up recently.
Yeah.
Say their names out loud on the public episode. But thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.